The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we'll start on the front page with the cover story headline in the Triangle Business Journal. Outlook hazy. NC's booming hemp industry faces shutdown by impending federal regulations. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Business on the Brink. NC small businesses operating in the hemp industry face steep challenges from impending federal regulations. And this was written by Kate Tracy. Jeremiah Leggett grew up around plants as family on his mother's side owns Logan's Garden Shop. In 2017, his family acquired the 40-acre property in Knightdale that's now Haven Farm. Along with his grandfather, Robert Logan, Leggett started growing cucumbers, tomatoes, watermelons, and other crops. But Leggett's mom, Leslie Logan Brown, struggled with anxiety and started using cannabinoidal or CBD products to help her. I just watched it change my mom's life, and that was what got us started, Leggett said of his involvement in growing hemp, a move not always welcomed by a family deeply involved in their church. My narrative around cannabis was demonized in a lot of ways, he said. Leggett started growing hemp in 2019, the year after the Farm Bill legalized hemp. Now he plans to plants a crop of 80 to 120 hemp plants in mid-May. Currently, one-third of Haven's revenue comes from its Haven herb hemp-derived products, both what it grows and makes, and products from suppliers that it trusts. 2026 is poised to be Leggett's most profitable year. But come November, 100% of Haven Herb's products will no longer be legal, leaving Haven and other hemp businesses in a world of uncertainty as they await policy decisions. Last November, Congress and President Donald Trump enacted new hemp regulations intended to restrict intoxicating hemp-derived tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, products that emerged following the 2018 Farm Bill. That would upend a rising industry in North Carolina. The state ranks number 8 in the country for hemp acreage production, and the hemp-derived intoxicating cannabis market is valued at approximately $1 billion, according to the state's Advisory Council on Cannabis Interim Report. North Carolina is considered one of the least regulated in the country, with no age restrictions, packaging requirements, licensing, and more. Rod Kite, based in Asheville, has been practicing cannabis law for more than a decade and represents several dozen clients in and around the Triangle. While regulations around the hemp and cannabis industries are in a constant state of flux, this moment feels different. This is the craziest, the most direct existential threat to the entire hemp industry that has existed since the hemp industry started in 2014. It's absolutely the single biggest crisis that the industry has ever faced, Kite said. There are a few escape routes possible for hemp growers and sellers, including efforts from federal and state lawmakers. The single best thing that can happen this year would be to get an extension of the implementation of the federal law, Kite said. In the meantime, it's leaving growers like Leggett in a quandary, wondering whether they should plant hemp crops. Leggett debated whether to even plant a hemp crop this year, given the impending ban, but his love for the medicine won out. For the past year, Leggett has worked 70 hours a week developing the business. That's what it takes, and I love what I do, and I'm very grateful to be able to grow and provide a medicine that changes people's lives, Leggett said. Haven Farm employs 35 to 40 part-time and full-time workers. Customers can buy Haven Herb products at the farm or downtown at Haven Herb Garden Bar on Glenwood South, which opened last year. Haven Herb also delivers within a 10-mile radius and ships nationwide. If nothing changes and the hemp ban goes into effect, Leggett will have to lay off 8 to 10 of his employees. Without its hemp-derived cannabinoid products, Haven Farm will focus on other ways to make money, like events, medicinal mushrooms, and other crops. The farm also boasts nature trails with hammocks in the woods and hospitality. The farm currently has an Airbnb and yurts for overnight stays. In addition to its cannabis products, Haven also has a coffee shop, gift shop, wine and beer. On any given weekday, the farm is bustling with children and their parents walking the nature trails and playing with the farm goats and playground. If politicians just came out here and saw this, I think they would change the conversation, Leggett said. At the end of the day, there's always a bad apple. The bad apple does not determine the tree. Chiropractor turns to hemp. John Bacella's intro to the world of hemp began with one of his patients. In 2017, the chiropractor was treating a 12-year-old suffering from seizures. While upper cervical care did improve her seizures, Bacella began researching CBD and hemp and their effects on the brain. Ultimately, his patient chose not to use the products he suggested to her, even though her parents were on board as well. The research prompted Bacella to start bringing in CBD and hemp products to his office. Soon, Bacella's longtime patients began reporting that the products they were taking were making a difference. They were sleeping better and feeling better. Bacella also started taking CBD and hemp products himself. "I noticed that I was feeling better and that my migraines were improving," he said. Soon enough, it was not just patients asking Bacella for products. Neighbors and family members wanted them as well, and since he could only sell as part of a chiropractic care plan, Bacella told his wife, "I think we should open a retail store." In 2019, Bacella opened the hemp company in a 3,000-square-foot space in Raleigh, followed by a 1,500-square-foot location in Wake Forest in 2022, near where Bacella and his wife live. He would have opened more locations, too, but the uncertainty has given him pause. "You're hesitant to want to continue to invest," Bacella said. He retired from his chiropractic practice last April to go full-time with the hemp company. Optimistic about North Carolina's ability to get hemp regulation across the finish line on the state level, months later, the federal ban occurred. "I really didn't think that it would happen, and I think that even after it did happen, it just strengthened my resolve and my dedication to the industry, to our customers, to my family, to get that changed and to right a wrong," he said of the federal ban. Bacella has spent the last 6 months advocating for the industry, engaging with Congress members, and asking customers to take action as well. If nothing changes between now and November, the hemp company will only have approximately 6 of its 600 products that will still be legal to sell. He would have to close his businesses and lay off his 14 employees. In the meantime, Bacella is stuck in the unknown. "It's difficult to make business decisions when you really have no idea what tomorrow will bring," he said. His customers range from college students to 80-year-olds, all seeking the hemp company's products that are advertised as safe and lab-tested. The predominant age range is customers between 35 and 60, both men and women from all walks of life, healthcare workers, teachers, and other professionals. Top sellers are flower and vape products, beverages, and gummies. Bacella declined to disclose his revenue, but said the hemp company has been profitable and growing every year. Revenue went up by approximately 20% from 2024 to 2025. Given the extra competition, revenue has grown by about 10% so far this year. Bacella wants 4 regulations in North Carolina: age gating at 21 years old, child-resistant packaging, product labels, and third-party testing. He thinks North Carolina is poised to be the number one hemp state in the country, given the state's need for a new crop given tobacco's decline, plus the environment and strong agriculture, manufacturing, and retail demand. "The only thing that's missing is regulation, a playbook. That's what we need," Bacella said. "And if we can do that, we can actually be the model for every other state in the country to say, this is how you should do it. This is how you grow the industry. This is how you protect children. And this is how you allow adults to make adult choices." The dispensary owner. Alexander Policia was on his honeymoon in the Mediterranean in November when he heard about the impending hemp ban. Since then, it's been a shadow on his otherwise thriving business. "It's been a real weight on everyone's shoulders. It's a constant worry. All our employees are worried if they're going to have jobs," he said. Policia and his business partner, a childhood friend and glassblower from Wake Forest, own Sherlock's Glass and Dispensary. They now have 3 locations in Raleigh, Durham, and Wake Forest, all approximately 2,000 square feet in size. The shop first opened in Raleigh in 2015 as a glass art gallery selling high-end glass pipes. One pipe costs $5,000, according to Sherlock's website. "Everyone's work of art were being placed into these dingy head shops, and they weren't being represented like the art that they are. So that was the original dream," he said. Once the Farm Bill passed in 2018, Policia changed course and began selling cannabis products. "We work with only the most well-known and professional suppliers that have full panel testing," he said. Sherlock's opened in 2019 in Durham, but the location struggled. Rent was $4,000 per month, plus payroll. Cost of goods and other expenses meant the location was never profitable. Palacio took out a $100,000 Small Business Administration loan during the pandemic to help the two stores survive. When the shop started selling THC and hemp products in 2021, Sherlock's started to thrive, and sales have gone up by close to 900%, and Sherlock's opened a third location in Wake Forest last year. The main demographic is adults between the ages of 35 to 60. The middle demographic for Sherlock's THC drinks are 55-year-old women, Palacio said. Most THC seltzers are extremely low in calories, which adds to their popularity. We have so many customers that never even touched cannabis in their life, and they wanted to stop drinking wine. They wanted to stop drinking alcohol. So with the THC drinks, they help them sleep. They give them that little buzz that they're looking for without the unhealthy side effects of alcohol, he said. The shop has 12 full-time employees between all three locations. Palacio is used to adapting to new laws after all the industry demands it. At the very least, he wants lawmakers to allow low-dose drinks or low-dose edibles. I'm really, really, really hopeful that even if they decide to do away with some of our most popular products, that they'll maybe make a carve-out for other products and we will just adapt, he said. The THC drink boom. The federal hemp ban is just around the corner, but that's not stopping a trio of hospitality experts from jumping in. The team behind Y-Hill Brewery and Glasshouse Kitchen, Bobby McFarlane, Chris Borison, and Sarah Abernathy, launched a line of THC seltzers called Tree Time on April 24. We could see from our sales that there's a decline in alcohol consumption and an uptick in our NA cocktail programs at both of our locations, Abernathy said. The idea to get into the THC game came from Borison last spring. Borison approached McFarlane, Y-Hill Hospitality's chef, to work on creating the brand. Chris and I spent a few days in my home kitchen with a little chemistry set and all these different flavor extracts, and we realized we were able to produce something pretty good, McFarlane said. The results were 15 different products with differing levels of THC and CBD dosages, a four-pack of the strawberry lychee basil with 5 milligrams of THC and 5 milligrams of CBD, cost $16.99, the blueberry yuzu lavender four-pack with 10 milligrams of THC and CBD, cost $19.99, according to Tree Time's website. I saw this as an opportunity to strike a chord between different notes of flavors that work rather than just hit one note on each soda. So every additional flavor that goes into the soda is a complementary flavor, he said. The drinks are all produced in downtown Raleigh. Right now, Tree Time production is outpacing beer production at 60% Tree Time to 40% beer. Tree Time sources its hemp emulsion ingredients from Chicago-based Perfectly Dosed. The team hired Raleigh brand design studio MRC for its marketing. The owners did not disclose overall investment in Tree Time, but did say they purchased a new canning line and a couple of new tanks. They already had most of the other equipment in the brewery, as well as employees to make the drinks. We're doing a lot of this ourselves and still bootstrapping it, McFarlane said. Tree Time will be distributed through Y-Hill's wholesale partners and Total Wine and bottle shops, but the primary place to purchase is Tree Time's website. For now, Y-Hill Hospitality is not shrinking back from the Tree Time production, especially since it's an easier and faster process than beer. There's less of a time limit on what we can produce since it doesn't have to sit in the tank for months or weeks at a time, he said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings. This is written by Dane Huffman. Huge homes surge in Northridge, always a prime area. This part of Raleigh is seeing new highs for homes. An empty house on one of Northridge's toniest streets is a sign of what the neighborhood has been and what it's quickly becoming. The two-story, 3,900-square-foot home dates to 1979, only a decade after Northridge began. Ed Richards was the developer behind Northridge, with the golf course opening in 1968 and the country club soon after that. Now, many of the most expensive homes in Raleigh are not inside the Beltline or North Hills, but in Northridge, and that's the case at 7005 Northridge Drive, which MAS Capital Ventures LLC bought for $1.45 million on May 1st, 2025. The address is now listed at $8.5 million, with the listing featuring an image of a large spec house. But for now, the house is empty and weeds have overtaken the front yard, sparking a complaint with the city of Raleigh. Listing agent Trina Knight of EXP Realty said the house is scheduled to be torn down soon. A drive-through Northridge reveals signs of wealth flowing in leveled lots, portable toilets, and mansions on the rise. On May 7, Zillow listed 24 homes in Raleigh priced above $5 million, with 8 of those in Northridge. Raleigh's most expensive listings are both in Northridge, one at $9.5 million at 1208 Barcroft Place, and the other at 7005 Northridge Drive. Bo Bromhall, a real estate agent with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, York Simpson Underwood, said interest in Northridge has surged in the last 8 to 10 years, with luxury prices soaring recently. It's a matter of, number one, you've got the club there, he said, and it's kind of the only place in Raleigh proper that you can get a nice golf course home. Car Dealer puts home on the market for $4.5 million. The leader of a prominent dealership group is selling his North Raleigh home. Esan Khani, dealer principal of Westgate Auto Group, listed the 10,819-square-foot home for $4.5 million. The mansion sits on more than 2 acres in the Linville neighborhood west of Creedmoor Road, north of Interstate 540. Khani bought it in 2023 for $3.19 million, per Wake County Property Records. Khani has expanded Westgate. In 2024, it paid $39.75 million for 2 buildings in Raleigh to expand its showroom and office space. It also acquired the Auction Direct USA dealership in 2025. Wake Forest opens in Charlotte. Wake Forest University's new campus in Charlotte is open. Wake Forest recently cut the ribbon on a 6,500-square-foot space within the Midtown Innovation District. The floor will house 20 to 30 staff and faculty members in the School of Business and School of Professional Studies to support students enrolled in Charlotte. In 2027, the university will add a law program at the campus and launch a study away program for Charlotte-based undergraduates. Innovation District lands another lease. A firm that manages the wealth of prominent physicians, professional athletes, and other wealthy clients is setting up in the growing North Hills Innovation District. The Leonard Mason Group at Millennium Private Wealth has leased 4,000 square feet on the 7th floor of Tower 5, located at 541 Church at North Hill Street in Raleigh. The firm will join Perexel, as well as the private social club In Town Golf Club, in the building. Jim Leonard and Dan Mason are the managing directors and owners of the Raleigh office for Millennium Private Wealth of Charleston, South Carolina. They worked together previously and joined Millennium in August. I have seen the growth and the evolution of where the financial services industries are moving, and they are now squarely centrally located in the North Hills area and the innovation area of North Hills. We just fell in love with it when we toured it, Leonard said. And finally, Caterpillar plans to hire 600 more in Sanford. Caterpillar is planning a major hiring push in Sanford. The additional employees will work at its Sanford plant at Womack Road in the Central Carolina Enterprise Park off U.S. Highway 1, according to company spokeswoman Lisa Miller. Caterpillar's current workforce in Sanford is around 2,000 employees. The Sanford facility manufactures compact truck loaders, and roles are being hired in all shifts in assembly, logistics, and fabrications. Pay for assembly workers starts at $18 per hour per miller and $21.70 per hour for welders. It's another win for fast-growing Sanford, which benefits from access to the Triangle, but with a lower cost of living, both Sanford and Lee County are seeing rapid growth. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one written by Lauren Onisorge. Live Oak Bank withdraws from incentives deal. Bank has a major Wilmington presence, but was short of hiring target. Amid undisclosed macroeconomic factors, Live Oak Bank's expansion plans on the coast have shifted, causing the termination of its $1.5 million incentives deal with the state. Live Oak, which promised to create more than 200 jobs in Wilmington back in 2022, has fallen short on the target, causing it to pull out of the agreement. The firm has not yet received any dollars from the state, but it has invested $47 million in its campus to date, a spokesperson told Triangle Business Journal. The state's Economic Investments Committee finalized the suspension of the incentives deal May 12. Wes Sutherland, chief accounting officer, Live Oak, wrote state officials that the decision was driven by a combination of macroeconomic factors and internal strategic refinements, which have resulted in a lower headcount than originally projected in its incentives application. That's as the company has grown to 837 employees in North Carolina, according to the letter. The company plans to retain and fully utilize its Wilmington campus as it continues to grow, Sutherland writes in the letter provided to TBJ by the North Carolina Department of Commerce. The digitally focused business bank has pledged to create 204 jobs in Wilmington as part of a $25 million expansion of its existing headquarters campus. It wasn't immediately clear how far it got. In 2022, Mahan told TBJ the firm had about 600 employees in Wilmington specifically. Live Oak said that as of this month, it had 752 employees in Wilmington. In 2022, CEO Chip Mahan told TBJ the firm would deliver. If you're not a job hopper and you're interested in security, you're interested in peace of mind for your family, I think I can keep you busy for the rest of your life, Mahan said then. Live Oak occupies a massive campus in Wilmington that includes 25 acres for buildings. ECU Chancellor says $25 million in cuts safeguard school's future. The university launched the three-year cost-saving initiatives last fall. And this is written by Zach Ezone. East Carolina University's cost-cutting effort is entering a crucial phase as university leaders move from identifying savings to deciding how the institution will operate and what it will prioritize in the years ahead. The university launched the initiative last fall with the goal of cutting $25 million from its budget over 3 years, while prompting longer-term decisions about how to reposition the institution amid demographic and financial pressures. So far, the university has identified dozens of academic programs to cut and some colleges and other parts of the institution to merge as it pursues its goal. Chancellor Philip Rogers has framed the budget cuts as a proactive effort to position ECU for long-term stability rather than a response to an immediate financial crisis. It's always important for us to take a holistic, big-picture look at the national higher education landscape, evaluate how that would potentially play out at the state level, and then ask ourselves the question, what do we anticipate seeing on ECU's fiscal front in the coming years? Rogers said. And as we asked ourselves those questions, it was important to us that ECU be an institution that shapes its own future. The move comes as higher education faces mounting pressures, including a shrinking pool of college-age students and uncertainty around state and federal funding. ECU reported total enrollment of 27,153 students in fall 2025, including undergraduate and graduate students, according to University of North Carolina system data. During that semester, 17.5% of ECU's students came from Wake County and 11.3% from Pitt County, according to system data. Fall 2025 marked the university's second consecutive year of enrollment growth, though the total figure remained below the university's recent enrollment peak of 29,131 students in 2017. The university's cost-cutting target of $25 million reflects about 2% of its $1.2 billion operating budget. This figure, Rogers said, is a reasonable target that could meaningfully transform ECU's business model without broad disruptions. In addition to identifying areas to scale back during this process, the university also wants to find areas where it can redirect additional resources. We think it is important to reinvest or reallocate resources into high-priority, market-driven programs that fit our future students' needs, Rogers said. ECU's goal was to save $5 million in the first year and has identified $6.2 million in savings, said Stephanie Coleman, Vice Chancellor for Administration and Finance. We have exceeded our $5 million goal by $1.2 million, and we know that more than 75% of that can be all realized in the next academic year, she said. Academic programs are a major part of this effort. The university has identified 44 programs for discontinuation after an academic portfolio review that evaluated 107 programs across 8 colleges. Faculty and academic departments initiated the closures of 33 programs, while a university oversight committee recommended the remaining 11. And the last top news item is written by Kate Tracy. $1 billion staffing firm expands in downtown Raleigh. Beacon Hill nearly doubles space and tower on Fayetteville Street. A staffing and consulting company with more than $1 billion in revenue is expanding its downtown Raleigh presence. Beacon Hill, a staffing and business consulting firm based in Boston, is nearly doubling its office footprint in downtown Raleigh, going from 2,200 square feet to 4,200 square feet on the 21st floor of 434 Fayetteville Street. Alex McDaniel, regional director at Beacon Hill, said the firm also plans to double its headcount, going from 24 employees to more than 46 employees over the next 3 to 4 years. While McDaniel and his team considered moving to other parts of Raleigh, staying downtown ultimately won out. "We felt that downtown Raleigh is a perfect central hub to everyone," he said. Not only was the central location a draw, McDaniel also said the proximity to restaurants, nightlife, and new hotels like the Omni and the Westin was a reason for keeping Beacon Hill's employees, clients, and candidates downtown. "I'm super jazzed up about the future of downtown and the future of Fayetteville Street," he said. The Beacon Hill office will feature natural finishes with white, beige, and green colors, as well as wood and glass to let in natural light. Beacon Hill workers are on a hybrid schedule that allows for some flexibility when it comes to working from the office. "All of our teams are really energetic, and they really enjoy being in the office," McDaniel said. Beacon Hill debuted its Raleigh office in 2023. Back then, Beacon Hill had the local customers. Now it's worked with 113 client companies in the past year, including tech, healthcare, insurance, finance, and life sciences companies. The firm's clients include the majority of the largest employers in the Triangle, but Beacon Hill also helps small and medium companies with their hiring as well. The Raleigh office specializes in clients in the fields of technology, finance, life sciences, and administrative services. McDaniel said the tech division's revenue has tripled since 2023 and has had 50 to 60% year-over-year growth. "I think Raleigh is really emerging as a top-tier technology hub across the United States," McDaniel said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter pages. The first one we come to is Zach Ezone's page, Healthcare and Education. UNC Health plans coastal expansion. After rejection, UNC is making another pitch for a hospital in Wilmington. UNC Health is seeking another major move to expand its presence beyond the Triangle and across North Carolina. The health system is pursuing plans to build a hospital in New Hanover County, pending state regulatory approvals. The move to expand near the coast comes as UNC Health tries to build a new hospital in western North Carolina. Details for UNC Health's plans in New Hanover County are limited. The health system on May 11 said it plans to build the hospital on a 62-acre site at South 17th Street and Shipyard Boulevard in Wilmington. UNC Health has not disclosed other details about the proposal, including the size of the facility, number of beds, and the cost of the project. The health system will have to include those and other details in its Certificate of Need, or CON, application to the NC Department of Health and Human Services. This is not UNC Health's first attempt to add a hospital in Wilmington. UNC Health in 2020 was one of several health systems to submit bids to acquire New Hanover Regional Medical Center. Novant Health ultimately emerged successful in that process, closing at $1.5 billion deal to purchase the hospital in February 2021. Since then, Novant has continued expanding its presence in the region. UNC Health still maintains a presence near the coast. It manages Onslow Memorial Hospital in Jacksonville through a 2018 agreement. UNC School of Medicine also has a branch campus in Wilmington. The proposal follows UNC Health recently hiring Ernie Bovio as regional president of the Southeast Coastal Market. Bovio joined UNC Health from Novant Health, where he most recently served as president of Novant's Coast Regional in southeastern North Carolina. In a statement, Bovio referenced the lack of alternative options for healthcare in the region. "As I've listened to my own neighbors and community members across the region, I've heard a clear message. Wilmington is ready for more choice in healthcare, and UNC Health is ready to deliver it," he said. NC State seeks next generation reactor. NC State University is pushing for a new advanced nuclear research and test reactor, a project that could cost hundreds of millions of dollars and reshape the university's role in nuclear research and workforce training. The university has completed a feasibility study outlining how it could add a next-generation reactor to campus. The project would position NC State to compete for federal funding, attract industry partnerships, and train workers as nuclear technology continues to evolve. NC State has operated nuclear research reactors since 1953, when it opened with the first academic research reactor in the country. The university has operated its current Polestar reactor since the early 1970s. Unlike commercial nuclear power plants, both the existing reactor and the proposed facilities are for training, testing, and experimentation. Faculty and students use the reactor to study materials, test equipment, and conduct experiments, while outside companies and researchers can also pay to use the facility. While much of this research is focused on energy, it also extends into areas such as the use of radioisotopes in medical research and healthcare. There's a huge interest in the Triangle in having a capability to do that type of work as well, said Jim Thaftrier, Dean of NC State's College of Engineering. And finally, Startup looks to help providers find obscure patient data. Keebler Health of Durham has raised $16 million to grow a platform that helps providers find important patient information buried in doctors' notes and other records. The company has developed a platform built on a large language model that ingests and processes fragmented medical records, surfacing missed chronic conditions with supporting documentation for providers to review. Keebler Health, which launched in 2023, designed the platform to help providers better understand existing patients and build a fuller medical history for new patients. Challenges posed by unstructured clinical documentation can lead to missed chronic conditions, weaker care management, and inaccurate payment under value-based contracts. That entire holistic picture is instrumental for a provider to really understand their patient well and therefore to be able to treat that patient preventatively with the highest degree of capacity, said CEO Isaac Park. Flair Capital Partners of Boston led the company's recent Series A round. The round brings Keebler Health's total funding to about $23 million. And next we have Lauren Onosorge's page on economic development. Siemens adds even more jobs. Wendell Nightdale to benefit as AI boom has German firms staffing up. With the flip of a switch, a longtime facility can suddenly meet 100% of its energy needs, even in a hurricane. Siemens, a German technology firm rapidly expanding in the region, powered on its campus microgrid on May 11 in Wendell. It comes as Siemens ramps up additional facilities in Wendell and Nightdale, expected to add another 350 jobs. Brian Dula, regional president of electrification and automation at Siemens, said the expansion is partly because of the uptick in power needs amid the AI data center boom. This month, Siemens opened a new operation in Nightdale, just a few miles away, where it's already hired 20 people. The plan is to go full production in June. And a second facility located at the Wendell Commerce Center on Highway 64 comes online in August. We'll probably do more expansion on this campus, but timing is also critical, Dula said at the microgrid event, noticing that rapid demand is challenging their efforts. Even though the Nightdale facility hasn't fully ramped up, for example, Siemens has sold out its capacity through the end of 2027, and that's not typical, he said. It's a unique time in the industry. It's definitely a race to keep up these days, Dula said. He said hiring is happening quickly as Siemens works to keep pace, and that it's relying on partnerships such as with Wake Tech to ensure the skills are there to meet the demand. The expansion that added the microgrid facility came together in about 2 years. It took 6 months of planning and a little over a year to construct the microgrid, being celebrated May 11. We can now fully island this facility for resilience, Dula said. We have the benefit of being able to offset our consumption. Bankers raise concerns about rise of stable coins. In Washington, stable coins are a regulatory question. For banks in North Carolina, it's being called an existential threat. The debate over how to regulate the digital asset is still unfolding on Capitol Hill, but for community banks in North Carolina, the concern isn't about a niche technology, it's about deposits and what happens if those dollars start to move out of a bank's coffers. If customers pull their deposits from banks and put them into stable coins, cryptocurrencies tied to specific assets, that could mean unintended consequences for a community, said David Barksdale, CEO of Piedmont Federal Bank. You take those deposits away from us, where are those small businesses going to turn from lending, he said. Barksdale, M&F Bank CEO James Sills, K&S Bank CEO Earl Worley and Peter Gwaltney, CEO of the North Carolina Bankers Coalition, were recently in Washington. Since the Genius Act passed last summer, issuers of stablecoins are prohibited from paying any yield, interest, or reward on stablecoins. But there's what Gwaltney calls a loophole, as third parties can hold digital assets for customers and pay interest on those assets. "Our request was to close the loophole, all rewards on stablecoin," Gwaltney said. Fidelity cuts impact about 1% of workforce. Fidelity is cutting about 800 jobs, or roughly 1% of its global workforce, in a reorganization of its technology and product delivery teams. What's not completely clear is how the plan will impact North Carolina, where Fidelity has a campus in Research Triangle Park with thousands of employees. A spokesperson for the Boston-based Fidelity confirmed that there was a small number of workforce adjustments tied to this transition in North Carolina, but declined to provide specific numbers. "We are adding hundreds of roles this year and projecting significant growth for the site over the next several years," the spokesperson said in an email. The company has 7,900 employees in North Carolina and employs roughly 80,000 people company-wide. According to Fidelity, the job eliminations were not a result of cost-cutting or overall headcount reductions, but rather were about moving to a new tech development and product delivery model. And finally, firm weighs jobs in Chapel Hill with parking. Another company hopes to trade free parking for more than 150 jobs in Chapel Hill. David Putnam, economic developer for the town, said Project Stark Tower, which he wouldn't identify, is looking to hire 152 employees with average wages above $77,000. It's asking for incentives via a $261,000 parking credit from the town. The project comes up for a public hearing May 20. Should a deal close, it would be the third project in Chapel Hill to snag incentives in recent months after Eats to Seats and Chapel Hill Ventures. Eats to Seats, for example, which offers vending services in major events, announced an expansion after a similar deal, which was $87,000 worth of parking incentives for 40 jobs on Franklin Street. And next we move to the real estate and development page. This is written by Kaylee Thompson. Lease rates could leap to $600 per foot. Triangle brokers predict higher office rates are coming before long. Despite sustained high vacancy rates in the Triangle office market, rental rates are rising, and brokers predict that the days of $60 per square foot and up rents are coming together before our eyes. The office market is experiencing a slow but steady comeback from the pandemic that includes leasing activity and trophy Class A office buildings opening up that tenants are vying to land, but no office buildings have broken ground since 2023. So that means there's no new office space following as current trophy space fills up. Kamari Ankenbrand, director of capital markets at JLL, said that in order for a developer to build a new office building and make the financials work would be to set rates at mid-60s of dollars and higher. "I would say 6 months ago we only had one building. It was One North Hills Tower that was at a rate north of $50 a square foot. Now you're seeing some of its competitors put out proposals at $50 or $51 that we weren't seeing 6 months ago. They were in the upper 40s of dollars," Ankenbrand said. For comparison, one of the most expensive leases in the Triangle in first quarter 2019 was at the CapTrust Tower in North Hills at $38.50. In first quarter 2026, average Class A asking rents were $34.82 per square foot, per data from Savills. That's a 9.6% increase year over year. Brad Korsmeyer, Executive Vice President, Advisory and Transaction Services Group, at CBRE, said that with a really good product, the case can be made to have rates at $60 or higher. The Class A vacancy rate for the first quarter was 17.68% per data in Triangle Business Journal Space publication, which tracks commercial real estate. Ankenbrand said a 15% or lower vacancy rate for Class A is a hard and fast data point that lenders look to for opening up lending for office again. Land for tiny homes sold for nearly $3 million. A small property inside the Beltline in West Raleigh with an approved plan for tiny homes has sold for nearly $3 million. Sherman Properties LLC paid $2.8 million for six parcels, each about 0.06 acres on the corner of Revis and Method Roads, north of Western Boulevard, per Wake County deed records. This comes out to $466,666 per lot. There is an approved subdivision plan for six tiny house lots on the property. The parcels have a combined assessed value of $815,277. Jonathan Hallenberg, manager of Sherman Properties LLC, said the plan is to build six individual rental homes, though he did not disclose the size of the homes. City ordinance says tiny houses may be no larger than 800 square feet in building footprint and no more than 1,200 square feet in gross floor area. Hallenberg declined to provide more information until the homes are complete and rent ready. Several work permits have been applied for the site per city records. The seller, Avellino Builders Incorporated, took the property through the subdivision plan process and started the site review process with the city. The 0.38-acre site includes 916, 920, 924, 928, 932, and 936 Method Road. There is currently a single-family home on site that will be demolished. And finally, Texas firm pays $90 million for industrial space in Apex. A freshly completed trio of industrial buildings in Apex sold for nearly $100 million. Texas-based Stone Lake Capital Partners acquired three buildings in the Apex Commerce Center for $90.5 million per Wake County deed records. The buildings were completed in April and added 613,353 square feet of warehouse space to the triangle. The industrial park is in high demand as the first building in the park sold for $43.6 million shortly after it was delivered. The buildings were part of the first quarter's 1.7 million square feet delivery of warehouse space. Most of that was delivered with no pre-leases. That bumped the vacancy rate for warehouse up to 11.3%. A press release from Stone Lake on the acquisition said it went under contract to purchase buildings 2, 3, and 4 in 2025 while the buildings were under construction. The company then took over leasing for the buildings and signed a lease before the sale closed. The acquisition occurred in two separate transactions. Buildings 2 and 3, situated at 2161 and 2170 Production Drive, sold for $59.8 million. 600 Pristine Water Drive, which is Building 4, sold for $30.7 million. And now we turn to Kate Tracy's page on retail and restaurants. North Hills to add indoor golf club. In-town golf club based in Atlanta adds Raleigh and Charlotte markets. A private golf and social club is gaining steam ahead of its summer debut in North Hills. In-town golf club based in Atlanta is under construction on its new Raleigh location at 541 Church at North Hills Street, Suite 200 in the North Hills Innovation District. Joining Benchwarmers and Standard Beer and Food as newcomers to the development led by Kane Realty Corporation. The 13,000-square-foot venue will feature 8 to 10 Trackman golf simulator bays, a cocktail lounge, outdoor patio with fire pits, and other amenities. The Raleigh location joins six other in-town clubs, including in Charlotte and Atlanta. Construction is on schedule, and the venue plans to open in late summer. Demand for memberships has been strong, according to Michael Williamson, known in-town co-founder and CEO. The club reached 100 members in less than 90 days, the fastest ramp up to 100 members in the company's history. "We've got a great group building there in Raleigh," Williamson said. The venue now has 200 members and will cap memberships at 300 ahead of its opening. "We quickly will build a wait list and then add more members as we go," Williamson said. The company does not publicly disclose membership fees. Williamson said pricing is comparable to other private social clubs like Soho House. According to reports on other in-town locations, initiation fees have ranged from $3,000 to $8,000, depending on age. Monthly dues are in the $100 to $300 range. Members use in-town for business meetings, lunches, happy hours, and other events that don't involve the venue's indoor golf simulators. One of the club's more popular events is women's Mahjong game nights. Obviously, our concept is built around golf and around the culture of golf, but I would say the main draw is the food and beverage and the hospitality experience, Williamson said. In Durham, retail center with Harris Teeter fetches $25.6 million. Out-of-state investors have taken ownership of a shopping center in Durham as part of a portfolio deal. The Riverview Shopping Center, located at 5100 North Roxborough Street, off Highway 501, just south of the Eno River, sold on April 27 for $25.6 million, according to Durham County deed records. The new owners are CPUS Riverview LLC, a joint venture between CBRE Investment Management and MCB Real Estate. The deed lists the Dallas address of CBRE Investment Management. Riverview is 125,430 square feet, making the purchase price $204 per square foot. Harris Teeter anchors Riverview, whose other tenants include an ABC store and Dogwood Bar and Grill. The property totals 13.58 acres, according to Durham County records. Riverview was one of seven properties across the country that CBRE and MCB Real Estate acquired together. The other centers also have grocery stores as their anchors in Louisiana, Texas, Minnesota, and Hawaii. With historically low vacancy, limited new development, and steady consumer demand, grocery-anchored centers continue to deliver some of the most consistent performance across asset classes, said P. David Bramble, managing partner at MCB. And finally, Happy and Hale founder Reddy's spinoff restaurant. It's been 13 years since Tyler Helixson started Happy and Hale on a Raleigh street corner with a golf cart, a tricycle, and a dream. Now, four Happy and Hale locations later, he's strutting into the old Raleigh Village Retail Center with a sister brand called Chirp. And that's C-H-U-R-P. The fast casual spot will open in a 1,650 square foot space at 3121 Edwards Mill Road later this summer, taking over the former China Star Cafe next door to popular restaurant Bella Monica. Helixson plans to start construction in the next 30 to 45 days. Helixson looked at locations across Raleigh before landing on Old Raleigh Village, which sits at the busy intersection of Edwards Mill and Durali Roads. He liked its proximity to neighborhoods, offices, schools, the hospital, and the Lenovo Center. It's one of the busiest shopping centers in Raleigh. The parking lot is full at lunchtime, which is great, he said. Chirp will serve bowls with chicken, steak, fresh produce, and Greek yogurt, and olive oil-based sauces. Guests will choose from signature bowls, think Mexican or Mediterranean style, and make your own bowls, as well as limited release bowls. Food has gotten so expensive that it's preventing people from being able to eat nutritiously at an affordable price, Helixson said. Unlike Happy and Hale, Chirp will not serve smoothies or breakfast. Patrick Althoff, general manager of Happy and Hale, will be leading Chirp's 10 to 20 employees. And our last reporter page is Ben Tobin's page on Greater Triangle. Developer pitches homes for Sanford. Two separate plans by an unknown developer would add 139 new homes. A pair of proposals could bring nearly 140 homes to Sanford in Lee County, one of the prime growth areas in the state. Jared Hilliard of Hilliard Engineering, PLLC, in Sanford submitted two separate plans to the Sanford-Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee this month for residential subdivisions. Those plans are the Lemon Springs Meadow subdivision. This plan calls for 46 single-family lots across 52 acres at 4506 Lemon Springs Road. The Thomas Grove subdivision. This plan calls for 93 single-family lots across roughly 38 acres at 3814 Lee Avenue. It's unclear who the developer behind the project is. The land for the proposal is spread across several different parcels and owners. Hilliard did not respond to a request seeking comment about the developer, construction timeline, and estimated prices for the homes. The projects, if approved, would bring new housing to the growing city, adding to a pipeline of subdivisions that developers are pursuing as demand pushes outward from the Triangle's core communities. Lee County has been reaping the benefits of this additional housing stock, as the once slow-growing county has climbed the ranks among its peers in North Carolina. Between 2024 and 2025, Lee County grew by 2.1%, according to the most recent estimates from the Census Bureau. That made the county the number 12 fastest-growing county in North Carolina. Lee County has a population of roughly 70,000. The fastest-growing county in North Carolina is Brunswick County, which saw a 4.7% growth rate from 2024 to 2025, making it the number 7 fastest-growing county in the nation. Lee County's population growth likely isn't slowing down anytime soon near the intersection of Collon, and Riddle Roads. Home builder Mattamy Homes is planning a subdivision called Vermilion, which will have more than 1,200 homes spread across 500 acres at full build-out. In Wilson County, industrial facility quadruples in price. An eastern North Carolina industrial facility has sold to an Ohio-based company for four times what it traded for in 2021. Wilson Mill, an LLC that lists the address of Ohio-based livestock feed manufacturer Calmback Feeds on the deed, purchased a 30,000 square foot facility at 2500 Wilco Boulevard South in Wilson for $3.2 million recently, according to Wilson County deed records. The Fremont-based sellers, Legacy Feeds LLC, purchased the property and surrounding 12 acres for a little more than $800,000 in March 2021. Calmback Feeds was founded in 1963, is family-owned, and describes itself on its website as a regional leader in the animal nutrition industry. We're still in the early stages of planning how we'll use this facility, but we're excited to share more when we have plans to announce, company spokesman Brandon Daniel said. Per Wilson County property records, the warehouse's actual year built was 1967, and the effective year built was 1985. The plant was previously operated by Cargill Incorporated, a Wisconsin-based grain and agricultural product manufacturer that shut down its operations in Wilson in late 2019. Cargill still has operations in North Carolina and Selma, Fayetteville, and Cleveland, according to its website. In Chatham County, First Horizon to put presence in Chatham Park. A Tennessee-based regional bank with a strong presence in the Triangle has taken a step toward joining a massive mixed-use community in Chatham County. First Horizon Bank purchased roughly 0.85 acres at 99 Russet Run in Pittsburgh for $2.65 million recently, according to deed records. The land sits in the Mosaic District. First Horizon is headquartered in Memphis. Kirk Bradley, CEO of Lee Moore Capital, which leads the Mosaic Project, said, "It is our understanding that they plan to open a branch there. They have a presence in downtown Pittsburgh, but have undergone work to upgrade their branch network to be more responsive to their customer needs." Mosaic is a 44-acre mixed-use development off US 501 just north of US 64. The district includes shops, businesses, restaurants, and apartments. In 2024, the Hampton Inn and Suites opened at Mosaic, becoming the first hotel to open in Chatham County. And finally, in Nash County, medical property sells for $2.5 million to Florida buyer. Medical real estate purchases remain hot, and a Florida investor recently got in on the action. Phoenix 3044RM, an LLC with an address in Delray Beach, Florida, bought the property that holds Rocky Mount Sunset Eye Clinic at 3044 Sunset Avenue for $2.5 million last month, according to Nash County deed records. The 10,113-square-foot building sits on roughly 0.7 acres and is located near the U.S. 301 bypass, U.S. 64, and Interstate 95. Per property listings, the medical practice signed a 5-year lease renewal in September with the potential for extensions. Medical outpatient buildings, or MOB, are a hot commodity due to strong tenancy rates. According to a March report from JLL, MOB occupancy reached a record high of 92.7% in fourth quarter 2025. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Executive Voice Q&A column. And this one, written by Kate Tracy, is on Rob Bundy. In a closer look, title, founder, Bundy Architecture, education, Bachelor of Architecture, University of Tennessee, Master of Architecture, Yale University, age 42, family, wife Katie, daughter Millie, 6, hometown, Knoxville, Tennessee. As a Yale University educated architect in New York City, Rob Bundy worked for notable firms like Bade, Stageberg, Cox, and Cook Fox Architects. But after meeting his wife Katie in New York, they eventually moved to her hometown of Raleigh, where he launched his own firm, Bundy Architecture. There, he's designed a number of residential projects, as well as the renovation of the law firm Edwards Batol's office at 714 St. Mary Street. Bundy also teaches at NC State University and aims to design spaces for clients that fit into their natural, cultural, and historical contexts. I aim to produce architecture that is honest in its construction, forward-looking in its design, and crafted to have a lasting, positive impact, he said. Why branch out on your own? It had been a lifelong goal to have my own firm, and I decided that moving was a good time to do it. What are some projects you've done locally? I have a handful of residential projects, but I definitely think the Edwards Batol renovation is something I'm proud of, just because it really embodied their personality and what they wanted to accomplish and how they wanted to represent themselves to their clients. You teach at NC State College of Design? Yes, it's a lot of fun to get students when they're very green and not knowing a whole lot about architecture and introduce them to it and get them into how to think about architecture and think through drawing and representation. How do you help students decide whether architecture is right for them? It's a lot of problem solving. It's a lot of being able to represent your ideas on paper. And if that's not of interest to you, then it may not be the profession for you. Are you a problem solver? Are you a three-dimensional thinker? If you think spatially, can you represent that on paper? What trends are you seeing? I'm excited to see that development is becoming higher quality and design focused. There are a lot of examples in the triangle of throwing up huge developments that are one single use and that still make people dependent on their cars. And so it's exciting for me to see more mixed use developments and urban infill projects that bring character to the city as opposed to providing just a function out in the suburbs. Why does the triangle punch above its weight in terms of mid-century modern design? It has a lot to do with the formation of NC State School of Architecture back in the 40s and 50s. They brought in some really talented architects from around the world and encouraged the early professors and even the students to go out and build homes in the area. And we'll go ahead and stop there as that article, we pretty much wrapped it up. But I did want to mention that today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. Hope you enjoyed it. Again, I'm Derek Frost, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.